Excuse me, sorry.
Exhausted.
So let's go quick.
Let's go. Let's do a retro breakdown. Let's go. I've had a really nice week, all things considered, but just a really, really long week. I had more hours of work this week than I've had like all year.
Okay. That spring pickup.
Yeah. I also have had our good friend who goes in stream by Golden Floppy Cow, okay, has been visiting all week. We took him to a volleyball game and just hung out with him, went around to some food places this week. We just took him to the airport to go back home this morning. So that's been happening.
That's fun.
Trying to play Unicorn Overlord. It's really, really, really good. And I just haven't been able to, like, commit the time to it that I want to yet.
Oh, okay. But, so it's not, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's been a good week. There's been a lot going on. And also because of the way things lined up, I ended up having to push a gym day. And then to make up for it, I did it on Thursday, but I usually do Friday and Saturday. So I am now like just like an hour and a half removed from like my third consecutive morning at the gym. And I'm like, that's more than I usually do in a row without a rest day. So everything is tired. How are you, sir?
I'm great.
Good. I'm actually also great. I just like, this is like the last thing that I'm going to do that's in any way productive today.
Mm-hmm.
I am so ready to just plop down on the couch and not do anything for the rest of the day. It's going to be awesome.
What's your game of choice then?
Persona.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
It's kind of become like a weekend game for us. And not, I mean, mostly because that's just like when we have time to play.
Yeah.
You know, it's when I don't have work and she has less work. And, you know, I'm not streaming. I've been pretty good about not streaming on the weekends, because usually if I'm just sitting around and I don't have anything to do, I'm like, I'll just do a random Saturday stream. And lately I've been trying to actually, like, make weekends time off instead of just finding other work to do. And it's been really nice. It's created an opportunity for us to just, like, hang out and do stuff together.
True, but it has hurt your ability to play Unicorn Overlord. I always say overload, but I mean overload.
You're like the third or fourth person that I have heard say, like, I cannot stop calling this Unicorn Overload.
I like the idea of that more.
It's honestly like, I think it flows better.
Just excessive unicorns.
Yeah. Or like one really powerful one with like a charge beam attack that comes out of its horn.
Sure. It could be
it's the name of the move. It's the Unicorn Overload.
Right.
That's a limit break.
I'd like it. That'd be cool.
Oh, man. Isn't there there is like a unicorn summon in a couple of Final Fantasy games. I know there's one in 6. I don't know if it comes back anytime after that.
Oh, yeah. What's it called?
Unicorn. Well, yeah, at least that's what it is in the original release of 6.
Yeah. I thought that was like I don't know. I have to look, because I feel like it has a different name, but maybe it's just Unicorn. No, I think it is just Unicorn.
Yeah, they may have renamed it in one of the retranslations of 6, but...
No, even in Japanese, it's like Unicorn.
Yeah. Speaking of Japanese, I stumbled upon a random... I had, like, Twitch just still open, because I'll always open, like, the front page of Twitch when I'm looking for someone to raid after a stream.
Sure.
And I popped it open yesterday just because it was still open from when I streamed. And, it gave me recommended channels. Like, here's some stuff that's live that we think you'll like. And one of them was Midnight Sumo. And it was just, like, some guy just, like, rebroadcasts sumo wrestling from Japan.
Whoa, that's cool.
And does, like, English commentary over it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, okay. I've never really, like, actually sat down and just watched sumo before. And it turns out it's actually kind of cool. Like, most awesome. Of the matches last, like, 5 seconds, but they get people in and out of the ring so quickly that, like, it kind of is just like, I don't know, it's exactly what you think it is. But I found myself sitting here like, oh wow, that was really amazing. He just hip tossed that guy. There was one guy that, like, beat a dude who was like 3 times his size. Like, one guy looks like a big sumo wrestler and the other guy looks like just some guy off the street yeah. who could use a sandwich. And he's just, like, really quick and shifty and eventually just, like, got his leg hooked and tripped him and fell down on top of him. And, like, that's a win.
When one of the times when I was in Japan, it was the first time that Letts and I were there. Well, I guess it was the only time that Letts and I were there. And we went to, one of the tourist spots when we were like, oh, hey, you know, mm-hmm. what, do you have any tickets available for sumo? And they're like, oh, the season was over. And they were so sad. Like, they're like, we're so sorry. We it's all over. It's not happening right now. We wish we could help you.
we would love to share this part of our culture with you, but it's not in season right now. Apparently, this is like what's going on now. It was actually like he does rebroadcasts, so sometimes it's like apparently they go on in like marathon things.
Yeah,
where, like,
yeah. So I
sumo
think it's
was
like
happening all day.
Right, yeah. So I believe that that's what it was, is that I don't know, it's, this is like the big sumo time, I think. Because when we were there, I'm pretty sure it had just ended, and we were there in around May.
Mm.
And so that's why I was like, oh, I think there's sumo happening. And then I was like, oh no, it was all over.
Yeah,
so I believe
it was
that
like
it's
the
now.
The Osaka Grand Finals or something, or Grand Tournament.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So yeah, that was just a thing I randomly stumbled upon, and that was like the first time I'd actually seen sumo, and I'm like, I get it. I don't know that I'd get like super into it, but like I totally get it. It was really interesting to watch.
That's so fun.
That was a fun little. It was just a fun little aside that happened this week. Oh man, what else happened?
I beat the Miles Morales Spider-Man game. I decided to play through that
because
it was part of the PS Plus. It's fun. I like it. The story does some goofy story stuff, but it's like whatever. It's no sillier than any, you know, Saturday morning cartoon turned slightly older.
Yep.
Storyline. So there's some moments where you're like, yeah, okay, that doesn't really make any sense, but whatever. Actually, swinging around the city feels fantastic. It made me want to play Spider-Man 2, but I don't want to buy Spider-Man 2 because I have the PS Plus, and I have the highest tier of it to be able to play the retro games. They want you to spend the most money because they know we're suckers if you like retro games and we'll spend the money. But I wish that they had more of their first party games as part of the service. But they said they're not doing that because they're like, no, you have to buy our games. You're not going to get them for free.
Yeah.
Because Microsoft does it sometimes, right? Where they're like, oh no, here, this is part of Game Pass, and even if it's a brand new release of one of their big games.
Well, Microsoft is desperate to get anyone to use their service.
Well, I think they just make the most money from subscriptions, so they don't care.
Right.
Because it's on PC also, so it's a way bigger market. I mean, it makes sense.
It does.
But it makes me not want to pay for Spider-Man 2 because eventually, mm-hmm. a year, 2 years, it will be free.
Yes.
So if I wait, then it justifies the purchase of PlayStation Plus.
Yes.
I can be patient. I want to play the game, but I don't want to play it that bad.
Yeah. I'm actually more familiar with the Miles Morales game than I am any of the other PlayStation Spider-Man games because I follow someone who did like a full Let's Play of it. So I've seen basically all of that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, the story is super short if you're just following the story.
One thing that did blow me away, though, is they have an Into the Spider-Verse
suit. Yeah. Yeah. And like that, the visor that makes everything kind of have that choppy look. It's so cool.
Yeah. It's that's real. Like that is like I look at that as like technical wizardry. I have no idea how that was even created.
The game is incredibly fun to play, just like the 2018 one. And I'm sure Spider-Man 2. They're all super duper fun.
Yeah.
If it's not going to change your opinion about open world video games, but if you like open world video games, then it's a good time.
I have, since I got the PS5 a couple weeks ago, I have been like sort of glancing over at the PS4 library and thinking about like, okay, well, now that I'm using a PlayStation and I know that it's backwards compatible, like, is there a game over here that I want to like, that I have and that I never played that I would like to pop in and like put some time into?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, Spider-Man 2018 and the God of War reboot are both sitting over there, both in shrink wrap.
You would like the God of War gameplay, I think. Like, it's sure, it's open world, but it's not the same kind of open world.
Yeah.
There's layers to it. It can be a very linear experience if you want it to be.
They're, like, if it's open, but there is just stuff to do everywhere, that's fine.
Sure.
Because that's more the Like a Dragon style. What I have an issue with is where it's just like big and open just to be big and open, like the Rockstar style.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, look, we made all this empty space for you to ride through.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually something might happen if you look hard enough. It's like, I don't want it, like, I don't need an expanse. Like, make it as condensed and tight as possible. I want to be tripping over content every time I turn a corner.
Yeah, that is fairly unique to the Yakuza games.
I think it is.
In terms of, like, the packed... Well, because the map is usually much smaller.
Yeah.
Obviously, the new games are a little different.
Well, I mean...
the maps are big, but yeah, they have... Yeah,
Infinite
Wealth's
map, the Honolulu map, is the biggest they've done.
Yeah.
And like before that, the Eugene Show map in Yokohama was bigger than Kamurocho.
Mm-hmm.
So like they keep making the maps bigger, but they're still full of stuff.
Right.
Like there isn't any part of that map that feels wasted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's and you can still run from one side of the map to the other in 5 minutes. And that's like without the Segway or anything, anything that makes you go faster, just like on foot, you can go completely corner to corner in like a few minutes.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
So like they get bigger, but they get bigger in the sense that like they add more stuff and more architecture and more things to see and more things to do and more little treasure chests in corners and alleyways.
Mm-hmm.
It's none of it is just space between objectives, and that's what I've always really appreciated about it. Yeah, I mean, it helps also that it looks like Japan, and every time I go to Kamurocho, I'm like, man, I've super been here. Like I totally get what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, that feels good, doesn't it? It's cool to see that and be like, oh man, I know this part.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not literally, but like basically literally.
the thing I had the strongest reaction with that actually was Persona 5. But that was because like a good part of Persona 5 happens in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And like there is like clearly like Shibuya Crossing is depicted there. Like you're clearly in Shibuya, you're clearly in Shinjuku, you're taking the trains, and that game came out like 3 days before I got back from Japan. So I like came home and then like started it up the day after our flight touchdown. And I was like, oh God, it's like I'm still there. We just saw this like yesterday.
It's just kind of a fun, like if you've been to Japan and you kind of just have that feeling of the city and stuff. I don't even like cities, but there's something fun about the city of in like the busy cities in Japan, and when they're translated into a game, it's like, yeah, that's cool. It mm-hmm. makes for a really great open world experience like that.
I think that like for any sort of environment, like if there's any time that someone does a really good recreation of a location, it doesn't have to be a city, although those cities tend to have the most recognizable, you know, areas, buildings, street corners, landmarks, that kind of stuff. So it's a lot easier to see that kind of thing if it's a city. But I feel like you can kind of get that anytime something is recreated in a game, like really faithfully, mm-hmm. with a lot of care put into it. It does make you feel more of a connection to that environment because you can kind of see like that replication.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know that a lot of Hawaiians actually were looking at the map in Infinite Wealth and being like, oh, yeah, look to the left. I live there. Like, that's my apartment building.
Right, right.
Like, right there.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, no, that's really fun.
Gene Park, who is a games columnist for the Washington Post, is one such person. But he also had, like, a more intimate knowledge of the city to the point where it's like, I don't know how a bunch of people from Japan, like, understood some of the, like, local aspects of the city that, like, shouldn't be well known to, like, foreigners or outsiders. For example, the really dangerous harbor pier area that has, like, the highest level enemies on the whole map. He's like, oh, yeah, that's where I used to buy cocaine. Like, that absolutely is the part of town where you don't hang out because stuff happens there.
It's fine.
So, yeah, I think that's really cool. And it always hits different when it's like a place that I've been to and I, you know, they show a landmark or something. And for Persona 5, it wasn't even landmarks because like everybody who has played a couple of, you know, anime games taking place in Tokyo or seen anime that takes place in Tokyo, like, you know what the Shibuya Scramble looks like.
Yeah.
You know what the 109 building looks like. Like, that kind of stuff is like, it's like the wee Eiffel Tower, right? It's like, you recognize the landmarks and you've seen it so many times that you're like, oh yeah, I know what that is, obviously. But I mean, like, for Persona 5 is like, there's a couple of scenes where they're like hanging out in sort of like the overpass where you get out of the trains, where you get off the train and you're kind of like walking back through the terminal and there's just sort of like a raised hallway that goes above the tracks, but there's like a glass window that looks out onto the street.
Okay.
And they're all just kind of leaned up against that like railing in the train station, just kind of looking out on the street and having a conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's little things like that. There's no like clear markings. It's not like a landmark. It's just like a casual place to be. And I remember to this day, it's like, I've been there. Like, I feel like I've been in that exact spot.
Yeah, it just makes you feel connected to the
the
space and characters and all kind of stuff like that.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know why we started talking about that.
Yeah, I was delayed for a minute thinking, how did we get here?
I don't know. It is cool, though.
Yeah.
Oh, you were talking about Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that I guess
people in New York probably have thoughts like that when they're going around New York as Spider-Man, too.
Yeah, you could probably, I think you could, you know, find your place where you live for sure.
Yeah.
Because it's a pretty good recreation of New York, right?
Yeah, that's my understanding.
I mean, I've only been to New York once, and all I really remember is going to the Nintendo store and seeing Times Square.
Hmm. Times Square is like the place that everyone knows about New York, but every New Yorker is like, that's the worst place in the world.
Yeah, I have no idea. But if you visit New York, you have to go there, right? You have to see that. You got to see.
Yeah, it's like the spot everyone has to go. But then like anyone who has ever like any friends or people that I've ever known who have ever lived in New York are like, do not ever go near Times Square. There is no reason. It's the worst. Now, I don't know if that's just because there's always a lot of tourists there or because the gridlock of tourists makes it impossible to do anything.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
But still.
It feels like that's a pretty standard... When most... It feels like the majority of people that live in a touristy spot always say don't go to the touristy spot when they live there.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I've been to New York more than once, but I think I've only been to New York once as an adult. And that was like 2016, I want to say. I went for New York Comic Con.
Oh, cool.
To work, actually. Jesse was working with a independent comics publisher at the time.
Yeah.
And they had a booth there, and they invited us out to work the booth. And they were like, we can't pay for your trip, but if you can get here, we'll get you a exhibitor badge.
If you
you help us work the booth. And we were like, that sounds awesome. So we did that. We stayed there for like 5 days or something like that. It was really cool.
That's awesome.
I hate the subway there, though.
I feel that way about most subways.
Like, but not the Japan subway.
I was about to say, except for Japan.
Yeah, that was the problem, is that like I would not feel as badly about the New York subway if I hadn't seen it after the Korea subway. Like, the Seoul subway system is like the cleanest and most efficient I've ever seen, and that's including Japan. Yeah. And Japan is like a close second. And then you get to New York and it's like everything is delayed and there's signs everywhere warning you about track fires.
God.
And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, this is a different experience.
But comparing public transit to, it sounds like, Korea or Japan, it's just not fair.
It's not, because you're talking about a society where like public transit is invested in and is supported by the overwhelming majority of people there.
Exactly.
And doesn't have the like a stigma attached to it where it's considered to be for poor people.
Right, yeah, that's so true. Where it's just part of life.
Yeah, it's just how you get to places.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. Because the feeling of it most of the time here is, well, why wouldn't you just drive?
Yeah, exactly. We're a car-centric culture, so it's like, you just take your car there. Why would you ride with other people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It also, like, you know, there's a scaling issue, too. Like, mass transit's more expensive here. But it's more expensive because less people use it. So they need to charge each individual person more money to make it viable. Whereas, like, you know, in Korea, you can charge, you know, $1.70 to go like on a 90 minute ride into the city.
Yeah, I was going to say it's interesting because the Japanese subway system is pretty expensive if you're using it a lot. Like,
that's true.
If you use it a bunch, in, or at least my experience, not that I'm an expert of this, but just as a tourist, if you didn't have the pass, you can spend, you know, I don't know. I want to say it was almost $30 when we were doing something, when I was with a school trip the one time, and it was a lot of money the one day that we were just, and it was just from using the subway a bunch.
Mm. We've always gotten the JR pass.
Yeah, I was gonna say, when you have that, then it's super convenient. It was just one day in between because of the timing of how the trip worked. I don't know.
And the JR pass is like a couple $100s. I don't know how much it is now. It's been a while since I've been. But it does allow you to just kind of skip the turnstile.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Every station has like the one like support lane, and you just kind of flash the pass to the guy in the window, and he opens the gate for you.
Yeah.
Which makes you feel like some kind of crazy VIP.
You're so special.
But honestly, like, it's mostly for convenience, because you're saving maybe, you know, $6, $7, $8 per trip. But you also get free tickets on the Shinkansen.
Yep.
And those are like $100. So that makes up for it real fast.
Yeah, you'll use, if you use that once or twice, And then you're using the subway a bunch. It pays for itself.
Yeah, easily. And saves you just so much time.
Yeah.
So that's our like Japan tourist advice for the day.
Yeah, what a weird, this has been a strange.
It has. We've been all over the place on topics. Podcast. I guess now's a good a time as any to just transition into golf.
Sure.
That's no less off the wall than the others.
I love sports.
Sports! So, speaking of sports, actually, two things. One, I actually, Jesse and I made our good friend Golden Floppy Cow go to Topgolf with us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, I remember you saying you wanted me to go when we visited the one time. I was like, I don't want to play Topgolf. I just want to sit inside your house and play video games with you.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And I think he probably felt the same way. But to be fair, he walked in and was like, I've gone mini golfing before, but I've never actually swung a golf club before.
Yeah.
And we went there for 2 hours. And he came out of there and was like, that was surprisingly fun. I didn't think I was going to like that, but I actually really kind of enjoyed it. So, there was that. Also, speaking of sports, and I'm not going to start the male music because it's only like 8 words. Mm-hmm. But Swoggles did send us a message requesting us to play 20 minutes of Mega Man Soccer.
All right. Well,
I can't promise we'll make it a full podcast, but I will play at least. I'm not going to force you into it. I will play like one match of Mega Man Soccer.
Maybe we'll make it a podcast. Cause I mean, the, to peek behind the curtain, there'll be some time crunches potentially in the future.
That is true.
So it wouldn't be the worst idea.
That is true.
All right. The idea of being able to
podcast something after playing it for 20 minutes is appealing at this particular moment in time.
what system is it on? Like Super Nintendo? SNES. Yeah. I'm going to the store to purchase it. Hang on.
Okay. Good. I'll wait for you to get back.
Oh, I'm going to just order it online, have it delivered, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, that's easier.
Wow, the price is fantastic.
Wow, that's really nice.
Cool. All right. It should be here momentarily. It's getting airdropped.
Awesome. That's how we get things in this modern era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, you know, such things are not commercially available. So Mario Golf.
I misunderstood.
I thought that there was like one Mario Golf game that was RPG-like. And then it was the Game Boy Advance one. But no, this one is like that too. This game really feels like Camelot was making Golden Sun games and Nintendo grabbed them by the scruff of their neck and told them to make Mario Golf. And they were like, okay, but we're still going to try to make it Golden Sun though.
I can see that. The dialogue feels like it's just a different game sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, even the whole, what is golf without dreams? Or like when you beat the game.
Yes, and then okay. They're like,
what's the point even?
We talked about this before you got there. And you were talking about some crazy dialogue in the game. And I was like, I'm not going to tell you. But there is some stuff that happens after you beat the game that is the most off the wall of whole thing.
It makes no sense.
So for this being a Mario Golf game, there is shockingly little Mario. There's plenty of golf.
True.
But there is like almost no Mario representation at all in the whole thing.
Until the end.
Until the end where everybody is there at once, and it looks like the opening of Mario Party. Because they're all just standing in a circle talking trash to each other.
Except for Mario, he doesn't care.
Mario doesn't care. And Luigi tells Bowser to stop being mean.
And then Baby Mario is there.
Baby Mario literally says Goo Goo Gaga. That is written in the text box. Which, to be fair, Goo Goo Gaga is a sight better than his usual Yoshi's Island statement of wah, wah, wah.
Oh, God. True.
Man, remember when you said you wanted to play that?
I do. I still want to play it. I've only ever played like the first three worlds or something like that.
Yeah, there is some really good stuff later on in that game that I rarely get to see, because what ends up happening is I get really like the first couple of stages of Yoshi's Island are really easy to like get 100%.
Yeah, they're chill.
And then like they're easy to clear, but they're also easy to find everything. So then I get 100, 100, 100. I'm like, well, now I got to just do the full clear on all of them. And that gets really tedious really fast. So then I drop it. And that's happened probably 8 times.
Yeah.
But going back to our focus here, there's surprisingly little Mario in the Mario Golf game. Mario is mentioned as like the greatest golfer of all time, and it's everyone's dream to beat Mario. And you go through all of these tournaments and you have to beat all of these rivals, none of which are connected to anything in Mario ever.
No.
They're just some dudes and a lady.
And yeah. the dialogue for everyone is just, it's so freaking goofy. Like, any of the people that have actual story dialogue is very confusing.
Yes.
Because, yes, you're right. There's no Mario. Then you get to a point where they're like, hey, you have an invitation to go to Peach's Castle. It's like, all right. And then you walk up to a Bob-omb who is like, hey, step into this hole and you'll be transported to Peach's Castle. He doesn't say you're going to get shot out of a cannon.
He does not say that you will be shot out of a cannon. And it is a literal Mario 64 cannon.
Because, like, and I realize it doesn't really matter for us how we get there, but I think the dialogue being like, oh yeah, just hop into this hole, you'll get transported there.
Yeah.
It turns out it's a freaking,
this is just how you go to the Mushroom Kingdom, which apparently exists in the clouds?
I guess.
This is a new revelation for me. that Peach's Castle and the Mushroom Kingdom is just a cloud top kingdom.
Well, and everyone's just hanging out.
Everyone's just there.
Just chilling. Except Mario doesn't care.
Mario doesn't care. The reason we keep saying that is because there's dialogue at the end of the game where there's a toad or something that says, like, Mario doesn't actually care about winning or losing.
And you think there's going to be another line of dialogue afterwards.
Yeah, it feels like they're setting up for Mario doesn't care about winning or losing. He just wants everyone to try their best and have fun.
Or yeah, or just have fun. Like anything. Yeah. Literally
he just
anything
wants to have fun with his friends. But or something
Mario's
really wholesome like that.
But instead
and
Mario's
then
just
the
dead
line
inside.
Just stops at Mario doesn't give a damn.
Mario doesn't care about anything. Well, and then they're like, wait, how come all the people down below don't know you're the champion? You beat Mario.
Right, well, because you beat Mario in a tournament in, like, the big final post-credits boss situation.
Yep.
Because the credits roll after you beat, like, the four main rivals, and then it's like, oh, you're bonus course time, you're getting an invitation to Peach's Castle. It's something that only the best golfers get.
And no one's ever beaten
no
Mario.
No one's ever beaten him.
He doesn't care, but no one's ever beaten him.
So you get all that nonsense, and then you play in the tournament, and then you win, and the credits roll again, and they're different credits.
Yeah, you know, it's a little fancier.
So it's like, you know, it feels very true ending. And then you boot into the game again, and you're in the clubhouse where you start the game with, like, the president of golf, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's the president of golf, and then the president of golf's secretary.
Yeah.
Then the president of golf's pro player on reserve that is just not as good as anyone else because you can't play him. So I feel like he just weasels his way in there somehow.
So they're all having this extended debate about what to do now that somebody has finally beaten Mario, because beating Mario is the dream of all golfers in the world. And no one's ever done it before. And keeping that dream alive is what keeps everyone golfing. And if we don't have that dream, everyone will just stop golfing, because what is the point of golfing if you can't be the first to beat Mario?
If there's no dream, then there's no golf.
If there's no dream, there's no golf. And so the resolution to this is just shut up.
Just shut up, kid. Well, that's especially funny because I was playing like the 8-year-old boy. And they're like, no, kid, no one gets to know you that you're famous and beat Mario. They'll know eventually. And then they even have the audacity to be like, once people know you beat Mario, you're going to be a hero.
Yeah. It's but like, not now. Fuck? We just have to keep it secret for an unspecified amount of time forever.
And they ask for your permission. I said no. And they're like, thanks for your cooperation and understanding. And then they take your trophy and put it in the trophy room. So they must scrub your name off of it. Like, so it's like, oh, where did this come from? Well, I don't know. I guess Mario must have given the trophy to the trophy room.
Yeah, this is the trophy to blank for beating redacted.
what the hell kind of ending was that?
It
was so weird.
It was so bizarre that I felt like there had to be some sort of follow-up to it.
Well, especially because it's end, like the last screen is end and then the ellipses, you know, it's got the dot, dot, dot. Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay, so is there
more golf? I don't know, maybe there's something that happens after that, but like...
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure golf with no dream is no golf at all.
No dream, no golf. One thing that like got me is I thought... So there's four main courses before you get to Peach's Castle.
Yeah.
There's the regular course, and then there's like the tropical course and the sand course, and then like the sort of like old... classic sort of St. Andrews-ish course that has like, you know, giant weeds and bushes all over the course.
Well, it was called Lynx, so I thought there's gonna be like a Zelda joke.
No, Lynx are just like,
I know what Lynx are, but I'm saying I thought they're gonna make it like a double entendre
it was right there for them.
Well, and then Link plays in the Mario Cup.
Yeah,
he's one of the characters there. And he gets only. Well, yeah, and all of them. I mean, the Goombas are there too in name only. Goomba got third place. I don't know how Goomba's swinging a club, but
that's where most of the Mario representation in the game is.
No, it's all
like
of it.
You can see Mario character names on the leaderboard. And then if you go into the locker room, you can be like, it's Donkey Kong. Actually, it's just a carving of a wooden gorilla.
I know that you can challenge Wario to a one-on-one.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't do it.
I was thinking about that because that's what was missing. The cadence for all of the other ones is like there's four rival characters and they're all associated with a particular course. So you beat the character on the course and you beat the tournament that's at that course and then that's done, right? Yeah. And I thought you were going to have the same thing at Peach's Castle where you were going to win the tournament there and then you were going to beat Mario one-on-one, but you never play Mario one-on-one.
I think you can play Mario one-on-one, and then if you do that, you get Wario one-on-one. I don't know how it works. I kind of ran out of time before we were supposed to record, so I didn't get to do any more than that.
That's fine. I did most of this last weekend, but I ran out of interest.
So, because I really like this game a lot. Like, as far as a handheld golf game goes, I play it as a kid.
It's a really satisfying golf game.
It's just, it's, I don't know. So playing Mario Golf 64 sucked.
Yeah.
Like, I never want to play Mario Golf 64 ever again. The conveniences of more recent arcade golf is just makes a really horrible experience.
Yeah.
But realistically,
I would say this Game Boy one is not significantly better in terms of the actual golf gameplay. It's actually quite similar.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah, there's some really weird things in this game, too. Like, when I was messing with Rewind Time to try and see how the, shot power works.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
So, I was testing it out, and you can get a shot that's, like a pixel off from being perfect on both ends. And then if you get it perfect, the difference in how far the ball goes is hilarious.
It's like a full 10%.
Yeah.
You think it's going to be 1%, but like the difference between a perfect shot and a slightly imperfect shot is massive.
Yeah, it's and the there's a bunch of times where I was like, oh no, this should be more than enough power, and it was way off. I'm like, what? Like, it didn't make any sense based on, you know, when you're actually compared to more recent, better simulated golf experiences, this still is pretty, you know, subpar.
There is a system in old Mario Golf games that gets very, very, very frequently overlooked. And I think it might be what you're referring to. Have you ever looked in the lower right corner to see the lie? Like, where your ball is and...
Yes, yeah.
So there's number underneath that.
Yeah, that's true. I did not pay attention to that.
That number is the approximate percentage,
right,
of the power that you set that you're actually going to get based on the lie of the ball.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That does make sense.
And if you're like on the fairway, it's usually like 94 to 100.
Sure.
It's like it's going to basically go where you want it to go.
Yeah, I do.
But once you get into like the rough or a sand trap or something, like heavy rough, the percentage is like 50 to 80.
No, I mean that I did not pay attention to it, but I know just, you know, from playing previous golf games, if the where the ball is, like roughly how much harder you would have to hit it to get it to get to where you want it to go. And even sometimes on the fairway, it felt like it was not hitting where I thought it would go.
Yeah.
Like it felt like the disparity between power was just weird sometimes. And there's even a few times where I was like, okay, well, let's just see what happens if I'm going to pick a club that is going like 20 yards past where I want it to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then hitting it at maximum power, and then it just landed where I wanted it to be originally. So it was really weird. And it was on the fairway. It wasn't windy. So yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it was just...
How did you level your character?
What's the draw and fade? I made that so it was basically in the middle.
Okay.
I didn't worry about height too much. And then I had the bottom one towards good and wide or whatever.
Okay. That's so interesting, because I started getting a lot of disparity later on, but I put almost everything into just distance.
Yeah, if you don't even it out, I knew that because I played it like, you know, 20 years ago.
Sure, sure.
Or I guess 25 years ago?
Something like that. That's cutting it a little closer, but yeah, I think so.
Something, you know, 23.
Sure, that's probably about right.
I never saw the Mario. I never finished it. I don't think I beat the Lynx course when I was messing around with the game.
It's really hard.
I thought it was pretty challenging.
And I love the dialogue in the game. You talk to everybody before you do the Lynx course, and they're like, I fucking hate that course.
Yeah.
That course sucks. Like, everybody is like, man, like, I like all of these courses except that one. That one is so hard, it makes me feel terrible.
That's how the dialogue feels too. That's how the dialogue is written in this game. It is the goofiest writing. And having just played through Golden Sun, I can say that writing is not Camelot's strong suit.
Yeah, that's fair. I didn't play very much of Golden Sun, but yeah, same. Golden Sun did a lot of really cool, interesting things from what I could see. And also, like, a lot of what it does really well, I was only just scratching the surface of in, like, the 10 or so hours that I played it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't even remember the names of the characters in that game. The writing was uber bland.
I played it, like, 2 months ago, and I don't remember their names. Dude, I played Golden Sun when it was released, and I didn't really care about it. It was never that interesting of a game. It just kind of, I think it was just a lot of people's first RPG, so it has, like, nostalgia factor 10 out of 10.
Yeah, that's always the case for, like, any game can get their hooks in that way. I think it's got really interesting and unique systems that probably drew people's attention. And, you know, I can't speak as someone who's been through the whole story. Maybe there's some hooks there that really sort of earn its reputation, but it doesn't start off particularly strong, I don't think.
Yeah, no, the I don't think people that really like Golden Sun like the story that much. Maybe after the second game, the story gets better. The story in the first game is about as generic as it gets.
Send your hate mail to theretrobreakdown at gmail.com and tell us why we're wrong about Golden Sun. We'll read it on the next episode.
It's okay. You can call me out because Dean hasn't played it enough to have an opinion.
That's right. I agree with you, but I agree with you with the caveat that, like, hey, maybe playing more, I would have changed my mind.
Yeah.
I have an incomplete picture of this, and I accept that.
I am curious about what Mario Tennis or the second Mario Golf on Game Boy Advance is like.
I really, really want to play the Game Boy Advance Mario Golf game now.
Yeah, I hope that that's something that gets released on the service within, you know, I don't know, the next 10 years.
There is absolutely no reason in the world why they can't put it there.
That's not reason enough for Nintendo.
That's correct. I just want to say that there's literally no reason they can't put it there.
True.
Like, it has all of the same, like, developer and publisher features as the Game Boy Color one. It is ostensibly the same game, like, in terms of the rights that they have to go through to put it on the service. They can do it whenever they want. So every day that they don't do it is just a choice to keep it away from you. Speaking of Nintendo, I recently heard that Nintendo has begun, as of like a week or two ago, sending cease and desist notices to Tom Fulp of Newgrounds.
Why?
To take down not safe for work fan art of Nintendo characters from Newgrounds.
Dude, nobody cares about that.
This is how far behind
Newgrounds,
the dinosaur executives of Nintendo of Japan, are at this time.
Do you think they're just going through like documents from the early 2000s and being like, Newgrounds? What's this?
Someone.
Newgrounds? Nobody cares about Newgrounds.
Someone must have printed out a web page and sent it over to an executive's desk, showing like, look, this website has like a thick Bowsette.
Bowsette in and of itself is probably causing them an incredible amount of pain.
And then someone got really upset and were like, you know, demand that they remove this immediately. And it's there's so much to it where it's like, it's Newgrounds. Someone is attacking. Nintendo is going after Newgrounds in 2024.
They've literally 20 years too late.
They've also decided that this now is their front line in the mission to remove lewd fan art of Nintendo characters from the internet.
Right. I mean,
they have found the problem and they have ordered their lawyers to go attack Poseidon by throwing their spears into the ocean.
Nintendo with no dream is no Nintendo at all. They have to have something better to do with their lawyers. Like, I mean, are they already paid for and they're like, well, shit, we have to get the money's worth out of them.
Well, like, okay, so think of this from the perspective of a lawyer. It's like, Nintendo is offering to pay me to send every time I send a cease and desist to someone who has lewd Nintendo fan art on the internet. I am employed for life.
Do you know, okay, in 15 or 20 years, when Nintendo finds out about Rule 34, they're going to fucking blow their top.
Oh, no.
And maybe something else.
The fact that they didn't... The fact that they haven't found it after the Bowsette situation is like... I mean... They can't already know, right?
They didn't want their game sometimes Japanese companies, you know, they don't want their games on a computer because they might get the models, okay?
To do
naughty things. Japan is just, the executives don't have a clue. I'm not sure. I don't know.
You know, Vanillaware doesn't put their games on PC.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I wonder why.
I assume it is similarly, similarly reptilian mental processes.
It is interesting too, because so it's more common for games to be on computer now than in the past, right? Like Capcom.
Yeah, and especially like Japan, to be fair, like has never really had a very strong PC gaming market.
No, it's just for the rest of the world. It's not for Japan.
Yeah, so like. They were kind of the last ones to jump on board the idea of like, you should make your games multi-plat for PC because there's an audience.
So this actually, it's also obvious that they're having trouble optimizing stuff because like Dragon's Dogma 2 is apparently a disaster on computer.
Yeah. Well, that's got more things to it.
Not,
like,
not the microtransaction parts. Yeah. I'm talking about the...
But yeah, it's poorly optimized. I think when Monster Hunter came out,
it was
six
really
months after the console version... Well, it was also poorly optimized. Like,
and Capcom they added, like a few months ago, they added DeNuvo. The anti-cheat software stuff. Mm-hmm. And that really screwed people up. And it was added later to like this like 6-year-old game. So why bother?
Right, right, right.
And speaking of, did you see what happened at, not Valorant. What's the,
I'm going to say Apex Legends.
I think that's it, actually. Did you see that there was a tournament, and because of how the anti-cheat software is, I guess it's put on people's computers, mm-hmm. a hacker was able to hack a person during a tournament.
I did hear about this. I did hear about this.
Yeah, it's kind of spooky when you think about anti-cheat software just basically giving people that hack a way into your computer.
Yeah, it's just another back door.
Because of how it's in the kernel of your of your computer magics.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you as soon as you say kernel,
I understand.
It's I know that that's a thing and that that's a really important part of your computer's infrastructure.
Exactly.
And if I say anything more technical about it than that, I'm going to start being wrong.
Right.
So you have to say the kernel and then pull back out to it's magic. I don't know. That was perfect. Well played, sir.
So, I don't know. It will be interesting to see how the anti-cheat stuff changes going forward, or how they end up implementing it and all that on computer. Because it seems like it was really bad in the beginning. Then it was pretty chill for a while, and now it seems like it's back to being a problem for every single game again.
Yeah, it's weird because I think what changed. Is that, again, I mentioned this a couple of episodes ago, but apparently DeNuvo actually works. And
right,
for a long time, it was
DeNuvo, that's what it is.
For a long time, the problem with anti-piracy software was that they would significantly hamper the performance of the game, making it in some cases nigh unplayable.
Right.
Where, people would buy the game and then download the pirate copy just to have a playable version of the game.
Yeah, someone was talking about how they were trying to play They're trying to make Dragon's Dogma run smoother by testing it on a couple different platforms, and they were locked out of being able to ever play their game because it was registered as being used on too many platforms or something like that. And like, these are all mine. I'm trying to write a guide for people to be able to use it. And it was because of, you know, some of the anti-cheat stuff. And
Yeah. Well, and like back in the day, it was like, you know, Ubisoft was one of the first to try the sort of call home, always online checking in situation with their games.
Yeah.
And it led to like a couple of the earlier Assassin's Creed games being like completely unplayable on PC because your connection would drop for like a half second and it would like kick you back to the menu and be like, oh, you've been disconnected from your single player game.
Oh my God, I don't remember that.
And you've lost all of your progress since your last save.
What? I don't remember that at all.
There were a few games like that required like constant internet connection at a time when like it wasn't common to have that necessarily. Yeah, certainly not like at a reliable high speed.
That's crazy.
And then like it was so picky about it that it would check like every 30 seconds or something like that. And if there was one failed call, it would just kick you immediately.
Sure, that makes perfect sense. I mean, it's kind of outrageous, like Nintendo, where you have to check in every month and then it's okay, which is okay, I suppose.
Yeah.
They make it so you can't just like buy it once, download, and then have them forever on your console
Right. And I understand that.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
even
yeah.
to the point of like, you know, if you want to check it like once a day, even, and it's like, you still connected? Okay, good.
But it should not boot you out immediately. It should just be
No, it was like checking continuously while you were playing, which not only made it so that if you, you know,
if you lost connection,
if you lost connection, or even just, you know, how sometimes it'll, you know, your connection will just get slow or just drop for a bit and a thing will time out just because it doesn't connect properly.
Yeah, because of computer magics.
Yeah. Like, that'll kick you out. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because it's running that check so often in the background that it's actually pulling from your computer's performance and making everything else in the game run slower, and then also dragging the computer's performance down to the point where it's more likely that a check does fail.
Help, computer. Stop all the downloading.
So there was all of that. And I'm also very well connected to the death of SimCity, which was their attempt at making an always online SimCity. And they're like, well, it has to be always online because it's using so much of the cloud computing and all of the processing is handling off-site. So it has to, like, there's no way your puny computer could run all of this on its own. It cannot be run offline. Like, literally 2 days after it comes out, someone goes into the code, switches, like, a yes to a no, and the whole game runs offline.
I don't remember that.
They were just lies.
That's brutal.
And the thing is, like, at that time, the public-facing stuff was like, wow, this like, DRM stuff makes the game run way worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, a cracked version of it came out 2 days before Street Date.
God.
So, like, you've ruined the performance of this game and made it nearly unplayable for the people who paid for it. Whilst the people who pirated it for free 2 days before the release date are having a significantly better experience.
They're in heaven over there.
Yeah.
Just chilling, playing the game offline.
So I think the reason that like they sort of chilled out on that because like it wasn't actually stopping piracy at all.
Yeah.
And now, so like,
Right, that's why this stuff works, but it's putting you at risk potentially to save them money.
Yeah, so Yakuza 7, Like a Dragon, Mm-hmm. The first one with Ichiban, the first RPG one.
Yes.
To my knowledge, this is hearsay, so take it with a grain of salt, but my understanding is that, like, that game has de novo. That game has not been cracked.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know any. I think the games that have it are not, they're not able to be cracked, at least to, for, like, I don't know, normal people just pirating stuff, I guess. I don't know. Which is a weird thing to say, because I don't really know anyone. I mean, I guess I don't know that many people, but I don't know how many people are pirating things.
I mean, Steam really took a chunk out of it because, you know, Gabe Newell was right. Piracy is not a theft issue, it's a service issue.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the majority of people want to buy the game, like, want to buy the stuff that they want to play or like or engage with, right?
Right.
Like, most people are happy doing that.
Yeah, the PC game market was a sloppy mess.
Oh, so it was so awful.
Like, pre-Steam?
Steam made everything so easy.
Where it's like, I, you know, this one, you need the, you got to put in the disc, and it, you know, you have to put in this disc and then that disc, and you have to make sure it's in to run it, and then it won't work on multiple computers, and you, like, you don't know, you got to download this software and that software and this proprietary thing and that proprietary thing to run this game.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was the Wild West where, like, you would get a game in there and be like, oh, shoot, you have that Sound Blaster card? Okay, well, this game's broken now.
I think that stuff can still happen to an extent, but that's...
It can.
I think that's partially Steam and partially how the streamlining of computer updates has made life a lot easier, too, for most people.
Yeah.
In terms of
there was all that trouble of, like, where do you get it? How do you install it? What kind of nonsense is it going to install to make the game runnable on my PC?
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was piracy, which was like, download an .exe file and play. And that was just straight up easier than buying it. In addition to being free, it was easier and often a better experience. So, like, Steam offered a situation that was a better experience than piracy, and so people did that.
Yeah.
Like, you got a friends list, it's easy to find games, they're all sitting right here in a library, they all run properly. Like, all that work is done for you. You still have some PC issues here and there with, like, system requirements and whatever, but, like, that's just par for the course.
Sure, yeah.
But stuff works, and it's reliable. And that solved piracy for the most part, at least in terms of, like, when it was really at its highest point back in the like 2010s.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was new then, too. So it was kind of exciting.
Yeah. Anyway, Mario Golf was nice.
I feel like we're good.
It plays a lot like the N64 one, but it has a totally non-Mario related RPG storyline, and that's honestly pretty fun.
Yeah, the leveling up is fun. I think it plays
leveling
better than
up
the 60-
is good too.
I think it plays better than the 64 one.
I think it does too, just by way of its, like, simplicity.
It's not nearly as clunky. Exactly. The simplicity is what makes the game playable today. Like, Mario Golf 64, not super playable. Mario Golf Game Boy Color, go ahead and play it if you want to play some simple Mario Golf.
I think that, like, if you have any memories of NES Golf.
Yeah.
I think that, like, Mario Golf on Game Boy Color plays the way you think you remember NES Golf playing.
Probably. Yeah, that sounds right.
Like, if NES Golf was good and not a completely clunky piece of garbage. Oh man. Okay, that actually reminds me of, like, the thing that I want to leave us with, and I forgot that this was, like, my first thought playing this game. When I got through, like, the first two things that you do in Mario Golf for Game Boy Color. I played for, like, 45 minutes, and I was like, holy shit, it's Golf Story.
Yeah. Golf Story. When that's how come when I played Golf Story, I was like, oh man, this reminds me of Mario Golf.
Yeah. No, it's so obviously exactly what the inspiration is.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. That's actually why I want to play the Game Boy Advance Mario Golf to see if it's a step up from this one. I mean, I imagine it's the advanced version.
even down to like going out on the world map and doing some little mini games.
Yeah. I like the mini. I like getting the stars in this one. I didn't do all the stars, but I did most of them. Where, you know, like do the putting challenges or the shot challenges. And finding a one-up mushroom was exciting.
I got it like really early and I thought like it was going to be a regular thing that would happen everywhere.
Yeah, there's like two or three, I think.
And then I got it before I did any actual golfing and I was like, I wish I'd gotten this. I leveled up from 1 to 2.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, that feels like a waste because I know that it's going to scale.
Yeah, for sure.
And so like I took the like it's going to be like what? 10 XP to go from level 1 to level 2, and I should have found it when I was at like level 20.
Yeah.
But it's fine. Like the game is relatively easy.
Basically, as long as you can get, and you know, on the 18 holes, as long as you get like around a minus 10, somewhere between minus 8 and minus 11, depending, then you'll win. So you have to. I would say it's not that difficult if you're kind of used to the simulated arcade golf game.
Yeah, if you are accustomed to like golf game, like top down golf games like this.
Yeah,
it's a similar feeling.
Yeah,
and you'll attach to it pretty easily. Although I will say that when I played Grace, I was like in like match play, that girl hit like back-to-back eagles from, like, 150 yards out on the fairway.
okay.
Just, like, chipping it in from downtown. And I was like, are you serious with that?
Yeah, sometimes I think that they front-load how well they're going to do.
Yeah.
Right, because then after the two eagles, she probably didn't...
She sucked for the rest of the, or, like,
even bogeys and stuff. Yeah.
And it does feel like that is intentional, where it's like...
It's to scare you.
Yeah, it give you the chance at the epic comeback, right?
Yeah, true. It's because, I mean, what's golf without a story and a goal and a dream? I have to just say one thing, because the end sequence where you have four adults in a room taking away your trophy because they wanted to make money, basically.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When if I was the adult character, it wouldn't have felt nearly as bad because at least I'm an adult making an adult decision. It's still terrible.
And you know what? If you're an adult, hush money's involved.
Right. But I'm an 8-year-old child. I beat Mario. That's impressive.
Imagine getting to the last room in Pokemon and Professor Oak shows up.
Like, we can't let anyone know.
Wow. Congratulations. You really beat the entire Elite Four, but beating the Elite Four is the dream of all Pokemon trainers. So we can't let anyone know that you've done this, because what is Pokemon without a dream?
At least Pokemon probably still would have given you like a photo, something to commemorate the experience. These people are like, that's it. We'll take your trophy too, because we want to put it in the display room, but it's not yours anymore.
We just made a trophy, like maybe it's like the trophy that they made up for, like, this will go to the first person to beat Mario.
Right.
We don't know who that will be.
Thanks. This is Professor Oak's fault.